From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 9th, when a Gates police officer responded to a call about trespassing. Officer Mike Furia was called to Dunn Tower, a senior apartment complex in Gates. That's where he found Tyshawn Jones, a man who said he was homeless. Another man had purchased food for Jones at a store, and Jones had followed that man to the apartment complex. In the video, Jones is barefoot and says he is homeless. Officer Mike Furia offers him a ride, adding he didn't want Jones to injure his feet. Furia assured Jones he wasn't going to jail. He told them that he wanted to bring Jones somewhere safe. Jones agreed to get into the officer's patrol car and said he would be willing to go to a shelter. During the ride, Officer Furia and Jones talked about their favorite music. When they arrived at the shelter, Jones was not allowed in at first because he didn't have shoes. The officer found some outside, found some boots, and he helped Jones put them on, took some coaxing to convince him to do it, but said he needed to get them on to get into the building and said it was the right thing to do for himself. Hours later, Jones was shot and killed by a member of the Rochester Police Department. During the overnight hours, Jones had entered the open door mission. He had grabbed knives from the kitchen and started cutting himself and threatened RPD officers on the scene. Officers ordered Jones to drop the knife, and when he didn't, and then moved toward the officers, an officer shot and killed him. Gates Officer Furia told media outlets he was shocked to learn of what happened to Jones. He had suspected Jones was suffering from a mental health issue. Furia is being praised across the community for how he responded to the call and for showing Jones compassion. And we've invited him on the program today to share his experience and to talk about how police respond to calls that involve mental health issues. And of course, that has been such an important issue in this community of late. I'd like to welcome our guest. Gates Police Officer Mike Furia is with us. Officer, thanks for making time for the program. How are you?
Good, sir. Thanks for having me today.
And the chief of Gates Police is Jim Van Brederode. Chief, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Evan.
In a moment here, we're going to bring in some sound that can illustrate exactly what we're talking about. And I want listeners to hear it. But I want to ask the chief, when you see this video, what do you see in your officer and how he handled this call, Chief?
Well, I look at that as a textbook. You know, those are the expectations I have of my officers, and every department does. And what he did, you know, I can assure you, was occurring all over Monroe County, and that's exactly how it should have been handled. Show compassion and figure out we're all about solving problems, and we're problem solvers, and did exactly that. He got there, didn't know the gentleman. We had no clue he lived in town, and you know, what information he gave us, he went and reacted to what that gentleman needed at that moment, and I was very proud of the way we handled it, and the fact that we captured the whole incident on body cam was just shows stuff we do every day.
Well, and we're going to be talking about that, Chief, because I do want to talk about your perspective from what is a common or typical interaction. And what has been sort of debated in the public discourse lately. We'll talk about training coming up here and what you expect of your officers. But I want listeners to hear how Officer Furia approached this call. There's a little bit of mild profanity as far as I can tell, but I don't think there's much. I do want to warn you in this clip. And here you're going to hear the clip begins with Tyshawn Jones talking about his first initial thought was that the police officer was there to arrest him. And from there, you will hear the conversation that Jones and Officer Furia have.
Hell, man. You ain't going to go to jail. We just want to make sure you get a ride somewhere safe. That's all.
You don't want to go to jail.
Nobody wants.
No.
Nah, you ain't going to jail, man. No, we're not here for that. We just want to make sure you're good, brother. Got to get you a ride somewhere. You can't be here, but we can bring you somewhere where you can be. That's all.
Okay. Great. Do what he says.
I'll do what he says. Let me get you a ride?
Yes, I'll go with you.
All right, man. You mind if I just make sure you don't got any weapons on you, brother?
I'm a little rusty, doctor.
Well, that's all right, man. You're good. No big deal. Nice day out, huh? I know, you can't wear the mask with the glasses at the same time. I'm just going to make sure you just turn around for me real quick, boss. You don't have any knives, needles, anything on you?
Okay.
All right, man, you're good. All right, man, you ready to go? I'll get you a ride down to Ormond Street, okay? There's a shelter there. We can get you a ride over there.
What else you got in there?
You got all your stuff?
From Port Egg Road.
All right, man. Let me go get the car unlocked for you. Right over here, brother. No problem. What's your name, my man?
Tyshawn.
Tyshawn?
Yes, sir.
All right, Tyshawn. You can call me Mike.
Mike?
Yep.
I'll tell you what I hear. I just hear a beautiful, caring interaction there. That's certainly what I hear. I hear a man who's reaching out and moving slowly with caution and care, and offers his name, is interested in Tyshawn's name, asks him about himself. Officer Furia, I know that you're going to tell me that this is what you do every day and this is what your colleagues do every day, but I will say I did think it was beautiful and important, and I'm grateful as a member of the community for that. Can you take me through some of what you remember about that day?
Yeah, thank you very much. So that day we got a call to Dunn Tower Apartments for a trespasser. And when I got there, I was unsure if the person in question, who ended up being Tyshawn, had already been, like, previously banned from the location, and that's why he was trespassed. But I was later informed that by one of the employees that he had followed a resident from a local dollar store back to there, and then he just didn't want to leave at that point. So I went up and I talked to Tyshawn, and I asked him what was going on, and he told me he said he was homeless and he was shoeless. And, you know, my first thought when he said he was shoeless and homeless was, those are two things that don't really go together very good. So I was like, I got to get this guy some help. So I didn't want him walking around, and I knew that that Dunn Tower, you know, they had called to have him removed. So I offered up, you know, to give him a ride somewhere. And when he said he was homeless, the first thing I thought of was, well, let's get him to a homeless shelter, you know, so we can get him off the street and someplace he can maybe get a bite to eat and get cleaned up and just be comfortable.
Yeah. And, you know, he seemed to think initially that he was about to be arrested. But you assured him he was not going to be arrested. When they called you, I think the super of the apartments might have called you, and he was just telling you in the video, you know, this man's, you know, he's not welcome here, he's trespassing. Was the expectation at all that would have been an arrest situation? Does that ever lead to an arrest?
It can, but that wasn't, I mean, I could tell you from my response, that wasn't my intention. I was just going there to solve a problem, and I think, you know, a lot of people see police, and the first thing they think is somebody's going to get arrested or go to jail, and that's, you know, very, very, it's not the case. That, you know, we're there to try to solve problems in a productive manner for everybody, not just take people to jail. So I wanted to assure Tyshawn that, you know, he could trust me. I wasn't going to take him to jail. I wasn't going to arrest him. We just, again, wanted to solve the problem and get him somewhere safe.
And so, officer, remind listeners where it is you did take him, and what you thought maybe your options were for someone like Tyshawn.
Well, you know, Tyshawn, talking to him, you know, like you said, he was homeless, and really, he wasn't. When I dealt with him, he was pleasant with us. He didn't, you know, give us any problems, or he wasn't uncooperative by any means. And so, my only thought at that point was, hey, let's just, you know, he's out here homeless and without shoes, so let's just try to get him off the street here and get him some help.
And where, you know, tell listeners about the kind of place that you did take him to and what they can offer him, even if in the short term.
Yeah, so we brought him to a shelter off of Hobart Street in the city, just not far from the town, not far from the Gates border, and you know, they're just like, right, you know, any homeless shelter. They can, you know, give the homeless a place to stay, you know, get them food, get them a place to get cleaned up, and just, you know, kind of be in the supervision of other people and be taken care of.
What did you think when you heard about what had happened to him, and, you know, the fact that, you know, you had just talked to him? I know clearly there was maybe some concern about mental health, but you were able to work with him pleasantly. And then he was gone. What went through your mind when you found out?
Oh, it was sad, you know. There's really no other words I have to describe it. It's just sad to find out that it ended up the way it did. I mean, obviously my interaction and RPD's interaction were completely different. Anytime there's a loss of life, you know, it's always sad. You know, no one ever wants to hear about somebody, you know, getting killed or dying, and it's just unfortunate the way everything ended up playing out. But
yeah, so we'll come back to that in a moment. But Officer Furia, for your work on a regular basis, how often are you responding to calls that might be described as somewhat similar to the one we saw in this video?
I would say on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day. We deal with people in crisis or people who might be in crisis all the time. And 99.9% of those encounters, they end good. You know, they end peacefully, and we're able to get the people the help that they need.
Yeah, and so when it comes to training for dealing with this, Officer Furia, what is the background on that? What kind of training do you and your colleagues get to approach situations like this?
We get a lot of training, you know, throughout the police academy and different in-services that we do. We have to complete a certain amount of hours every year of training. And we also have courses in the academy which deal with people in crisis intervention. And it addresses a lot about communicating, trying to remain, you know, try not to become judgmental or anything like that, to just try to establish a rapport with the person and really get to what the root of their problem is and figure out the best course of action to take where you can get them the help that they need.
In the video we saw, you offered your name to Tyshawn Jones. Why did you do that?
What I was trained to do. You look back at it, and, you know, people, they look at cops, right, or police officers, and they just see officer, but, you know, behind the badge and the uniform, it's a person there too. So I didn't want to be Officer Furia to him. I wanted to be Mike, right? I wanted him to call me by my first name. I thought that would have helped establish trust between Tyshawn and me and just kind of develop a rapport that would ultimately just help me to help him.
Chief Van Brederode, this was obviously a case where, you know, one of your officers handled the situation with real grace and humanity. And I know you say that this happens all the time, and most of the time the public does not see it. What I want to ask you about training is, do most people who come on the force have the innate ability to work with people like that? Can you train someone to work with people like that? How do you make sure those interactions become the norm, Chief?
Well, this is where the recruitment process comes in very important. And you got to get it right on who I hire, you know what I mean? And it's easier for me because I only have a 31-person police department. I might hire one a year. It's all about the person that you hire and you make a police officer. Do they come with those life experiences? Do they have that compassion, that upbringing that taught them how to treat people? You know, I mean, you can train people to do stuff, but I still can't change that chemistry of who the person is. You know, and so that recruitment process of vetting out who we're hiring, look for certain red flags that and behavioral things that I don't like, you know. And so, yeah, training is very important. Don't get me wrong. And we do a lot of that training. But at the end of the day, it's all about the person wearing that uniform. And I don't care what organization you run. At the end of the day, people will be people, right? I mean, we make our best choices. We do what we think is right. But at the end of the day, I can't control how an employee is going to act or not act. And so, we had no idea this encounter would become such a major event, you know what I mean? And when I, you know, and of course, you know, when I heard we had had an encounter with him 12 hours before and we're going to watch the video, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, you're not, your stomach's in knots, you know, you're like, we see what my officer did. And you're just, you're like a parent, you're proud. You're like, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, it couldn't have, it went very well, you know, you're kind of like proud of your officer and you say, you know, this is why that hiring process, we can't lower that. You can't cut corners on hiring, right? And I know, you know, we go through a lot of candidates trying to find the right candidate because one mistake, as we've seen, you know, nationally, can destroy a community, a police department. And it's all about who you hire, and then I can try to train them, but it's about who you hire.
Well, let me ask you a couple things about that. You said you've got 31 officers on the force, maybe one per year or so on average is what you're hiring. How many people apply if there's one job open in a year?
Well, that's the whole thing, right? Nobody applies. It's like I have an opening. I then go to the civil service list, you know, which makes me take from, you know.
How many candidates, I think I should say?
Well, I could go through 20 interviews, 40 interviews until I find what I think I'm looking for, you know. So it's a tough system to hire because then I have to follow a certain order, you know, which kind of forces me to take somebody, or if I try to ask them to sign off, you know, because I'm looking, you know, you're looking for that right person, you know. And it's hard to describe it, but you know it when you see it. And it's like when you saw that video, right? You said, we all said when we saw that video, that interaction, you're like, now there's a guy, there's a policeman that gets it, you know? He knows how to deal with people. He immediately took off the rank and said, call me Mike. I mean, those are all great techniques, right, that you would teach in any type of school, how to build that rapport, defuse people, get them to do what you want them to do. And it played out just perfect, but again, I think a lot of it has to be the person that we're hiring.
Sure. Did you hire Officer Furia?
I did. And I got to tell you, he's got an interesting background. I'll let Mike talk about his background. But I took a big risk hiring him, you know. But I believed in him, and I gave him an opportunity, and I'll let him tell the story.
Okay. Officer Furia, you want to take it from there? And you might be on mute, Mike. There you are.
Oh, okay. So, I was hired with the Gates Police Department back in 2018. Before that, I had worked as a police officer for a little over 4 years down in Baltimore City. So I had working down in Baltimore City, you get a lot of different stuff. It's a big city. There's definitely a lot going on down there. A very high crime rate. And then, you know, there was right when I first started, there was the civil unrest right in 2015 there, which I was literally just out of the academy when that all happened. So I learned fast down there.
Okay. And Chief Van Brederode, why do you think it was a risk in some sense to hire this officer?
Well, I've seen through my 37 years of experience, you know, I saw a lot of good stuff in Mike, but I also have, you know, had that conversation with him. I said, you know, Mike, Gates is not Baltimore, you know. Baltimore policing is not the same as a suburban town in Rochester, New York, you know. And, you know, you need to know how to make that transition from a two-man car beat with, you know, lots of homicides taking place and shootings and being able to come out here and unlock somebody's car door or deal with Tyshawn, you know what I mean? That incident. And so, you know, I've had other experiences when I've taken people from big cities, you know. The policing is different. Look, I started in Gates and I went and transferred to Rochester Police Department and then I came back to Gates, right? I preferred the suburban policing. Because it's tough. It's, you know, you talk about officer wellness and the things, look at the things that the Rochester Police Department has seen in the last 5 days. I mean, unbelievable tragedies. And it's tough. It's a tough work environment. But you know, you gotta come to work every day and be able to change gears real quick. You know, going from a high stress call to this is just a normal citizen who, you know, who's sitting on the side of the road with a flat tire. But he made that transition very well. You know, from the city from Baltimore PD, coming out here to Gates. He had connections in Gates. He grew up in Gates. He left Rochester to go pursue a career in law enforcement because there was not too many jobs up here, you know. And then he wanted to transfer back, and so it paid off how he did it. But yeah, obviously coming from a big city, I had some concerns about his ability to want to be a compassionate policeman and you know, make sure he had good habits.
And now, Chief, I know you've heard some of the criticism from advocates for police reform, and one of the common criticisms is that in the process of hiring, too often the people who get the jobs don't maybe have the kind of compassionate mindset that we saw with Officer Furia, or too often view the work as kind of an us versus them war on the streets. Now, that is a broad-based criticism. Are there elements of fairness to any of that criticism in your eyes?
Look, you know, I've worked with some coworkers over the years, you know, that kind of, you know, became a little hard because of their environment, you know what I mean? And you can't become a product of your environment, you know? And especially now where there's so much criticism going on and there's so much backlash going on. When you're on a call, you know, or you're stepping out on a street corner and there's a lot of backlash coming, you know. And you've got to, like, be able to bounce it off your chest and move on. And you can't let it start to control your behavior. And it's tough. It's a tough job. I've been there, you know. Urban policing is a lot different than suburban policing.
Well, let's talk about how things ended up here. And there's, an interesting question from a listener named Benjamin who wants to know, what would have happened if Tyshawn did not want a ride? Benjamin says, I believe this was only a good interaction because he immediately complied with the officer. Chief Van Brederode, fair or not?
Well, I don't think he immediately complied. I mean, I think there were some great negotiation skills that went on with Mike. If he didn't, then, you know, we had other options, you know. We call fit when things go sideways, you know. Or not being able to communicate with someone. We do have that option now. That's on the table. And, you know, again, we would have just kept trying. Look, the last thing we want to do is get tied up dragging this guy away in handcuffs, you know. It doesn't benefit any of us. So, you know, we would throw the kitchen sink at it, trying to get him to go somewhere that would be safe.
Without getting physical, Chief.
Absolutely. Right. That's the last thing any of us want to do.
Okay, so Officer Furia, this is a case where, you know, Benjamin is wondering, what happens if Tyshawn becomes a little bit more recalcitrant with you? What would your steps have been then?
I mean, it's tough to really say what I would or wouldn't have done. You know, I mean, I could tell you I would have definitely tried to continue establishing a rapport with Tyshawn and establishing that trust, because ultimately the cooperation comes from building a rapport with each other and having trust in each other. But at the same time, we still have to remain, you know, safe, and we have to make sure that, you know, he's safe and we're safe and the people around us are safe. So I can't sit here and say exactly what would have happened, but I can tell you that I would have done my best to try to continue to establish a rapport with him. If for some reason I was unsuccessful doing so, then I would have let my partner step in and see if maybe, you know, he would have been more responsive to him. I mean, there's a lot of different options and things that we could do, but it's one of those things. It played out. We were able to convince him to do what what was best for him and solve the problem at that time.
Now, Officer Furia and Chief Van Brederode from the Gates Police Department joining us. Another aspect this community has been talking about, especially in Rochester, but really in policing in general, is that you ought to have mental health experts either responding to these calls instead of the police or with the police. So in Rochester, there are the so-called PIC teams, the person in crisis teams, that will be available in larger numbers in the weeks and months to come, according to Mayor Warren, to respond to calls perhaps like this one. There's been discussion about changing the rules in Rochester so that any call involving a child in distress automatically has a mental health expert coming with police to make sure they are there for that part of the interaction. Officer Furio, does your job become any easier if you have mental health experts who come with you to calls like this, given how often you say that you've got to deal with stuff like this?
It's a case-by-case scenario. You know, I mean, if we have somebody who's cooperative, you know, not really, not even necessarily cooperative, but maybe not acting violent or not armed with weapons or anything like that, it could definitely help. But at the same time, if you have a situation where you have somebody who's very, very uncooperative or armed with a weapon or trying to cause harm to other people, then essentially, you know, that's one more person that you have to basically protect and make sure they don't get hurt as well. So they're a great asset to have. They're super helpful. We do use them all the time. But there's, you know, that we have to make sure that that scene is under control before we can have them step in for us and help out.
Okay, Chief Van Brederode, should officers have mental health experts with them on calls like this?
Well, we should have it at our disposal, and I think that's where we're trying to get to. And let me tell you something. You know, we're throwing around this pick stuff and fit stuff. We are nowhere near having an adequate system in place, okay? It sounds great. There's been a lot of great press conferences, but we are nowhere near ever being able to get to that point of thinking we're going to be able to have somebody come by every call.
Why not? Resources?
Well, we don't have the resources. There's no way we have enough resources. And I can give you a couple of examples as the show goes, and you need some time here, of a most very recent one we had on Sunday. It's going to take an enormous amount of staff and setting up a structure that can support 24/7. And if it's crisis, you've got to have a response time of 10 minutes or less. And I can give you a great example of what happened on Sunday where we had a crisis situation, a man with a knife to his throat in his garage, right, wanted to die. We called for fit. 30 minutes later, we got the guy to throw the knife down. It all ends peacefully. Fit hadn't even arrived. See what I mean? So we're nowhere near, and I know, you know, Adam Bello and everyone's trying to work to get this going, but I think there's a misperception out there right now that, you know, we're nowhere near rolling this thing. This thing is not adequate at this point. But it's a great tool. It's a great tool, absolutely.
And so, Chief, it sounds like just with response time and total number of people working, there would have to be a lot more money spent to bring it up to speed to handle all the calls? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And look, and that's my message to the policymakers, right? It's time to put up. You know what I mean? If we're going to talk this game, and it's a great thing, okay? Law enforcement supports this. We want it. We asked for this for years. Nobody's ever listened. So now there's a great conversation going on. But you got to put up the resources. To say we have it 24/7, that's kind of a lie. We don't have it 24/7. It's not functioning. And I realize it's being born right now, you know? But the problem is the kind of cart got put in front of the horse, you know what I mean? And so it's going to take a lot more resources, a lot more people. We need better supervision. We need a whole structure put in place that we don't have right now. And I know it's all work in progress. And you know what? Let's come back 6 months from now and see where we're at. But right now, you know, to think that you're going to get somebody unseen, there's no guarantees. And it's about a 50-50 shot when we've been calling, you know, whether we can get somebody there in time. Or they just don't have somebody that can get there.
Chief, one of the other common criticisms is that police officers get a lot more training on just about everything else but de-escalation. Or if you look at the actual amount of time spent on responding compassionately, de-escalation, bringing, you know, sort of diffusing potentially violent situations or working with people in mental health crisis, the training is just dwarfed by everything else. What do you say to that, Chief?
You know, it used to be like that. I agree. This word de-escalation, you know, kind of became part of our vocabulary about five or 6 years ago, this whole concept of it, and now we clearly have changed that. So I would, you know, yeah, 5 or 6 years ago, that wasn't part of our vocabulary. It was get them in custody as fast as you can, and here are some techniques to take them down and get it done. Now we are, you know, again, 5 or 6 years ago, this whole concept of de-escalation came up, and now it is being taught quite routinely now. So I think a police officer now in 2021 clearly has had a lot of training in de-escalation and trying to talk people down when you can. Nothing is successful. Nothing's 100% in life, right? Except taxes and death. We've heard that, right? Well, there's actually some truth to that. Nothing is going to be 100%. Having a fit car, a pit car there, all the training you want. At the end of the day, there's going to be people. You know, you're dealing with human behavior, right? There's going to be people that are set and they're going to accomplish whatever they're trying to accomplish, whether it's suicide by cop or harming somebody or, you know, at the end of the day, it is human behavior. And I think we got to just remember, you know, not everything is going to have a pretty ending to it.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about how the sad story of Tyshawn Jones ended. He, as we mentioned, grabbed a knife from the Open Door Mission, apparently began cutting himself, and when officers ordered him to drop the knife, he did not. And when he started to move in their direction, one of the officers fired 5 shots and killed him. Chief Van Bredero, do you have any problem with what you saw in that interaction?
Look, that was textbook training, and I don't want to talk about their case because it's their case. But I can tell you we do exactly that. Every one of us in Monroe County has been put through that scenario, and a video-based scenario of a person with a knife, and you've seen the shoot, don't shoot scenarios I'm talking about, I think, in the past, you know. Where the person, you know, sometimes the role player drops the knife, and it's a no-shoot situation, and then there's other times, drop the knife, and then they charge at you, they come at you, and you just can't create the distance no more. And you kind of have to defend yourself, you know. But again, how these things play out is ultimately up to the person that we're dealing with. And look, we had a suicide by cop here in the town of Gates about 15 years ago. You know, this whole concept of suicide by cop is a real thing.
But do you view the Tyshawn Jones case that way? That was suicide by cop?
I do. I absolutely do.
And there was no way, from what you saw, that he could have survived that interaction, given what was going on?
Like, I'm not going to sit there and second-guess another police department. I told you my opinion.
Okay.
And I got to agree with Cedric Alexander, okay? Here's a guy who's a psychologist, and you know what? Listen to what Cedric Alexander said.
Which, by the way, what the chief is referring to is former Rochester Chief Cedric Alexander has said that that was the only possible outcome, given the way Tyshawn Jones responded and did not respond to police. So, in other words, he endorsed the actions of RPD in that interaction. Chief, if there's one other thing that I want you to clear up then, it's something that comes up a lot with listeners. I know when this comes up, or at least I should say, I have seen officers scoff or shake their heads when this comes up, but listeners want to ask you, why can't you shoot to injure? Why do you need 5 bullets that could kill? Can you take him down in a different way? And I know that comes up a lot. Can you address that, please?
So here, that's a common question, and there's a lot of different factors that come into it, right? When you say that's going to happen, and then what happens when the officer misses and hits him in the stomach and he bleeds out or hits him in the chest? Then you've set us all up for failure, you know. And then you have litigation. So the science and all the experts teach center mass to stop the threat, not to kill, but to stop the threat, is what the teaching has been for many, many, many years. And again, you know, look at this is a high intensity incident here. It's one thing to sit home and watch that video, and we all sit there in our living rooms and the comfort of our homes and say, oh, wow, why wouldn't we do that? Or it's a whole different scenario when someone's threatening you with a knife or someone's got a gun pointed in your direction. Until you've been there and you've experienced the different reactions your body goes through, your heartbeat's gone crazy, you know, and to be able to, you know, shoot accurately and to be able to do something like that is not something that is taught in law enforcement anywhere in the country.
Talking to Gates Police Chief James Van Brederode and Gates Police Officer Mike Furia. Officer Furia responded to a call on March 9th and had an interaction with a man named Tyshawn Jones, and Officer Furia was praised for his interaction in which he showed some compassion, got Tyshawn to a shelter. Unfortunately, Tyshawn died in an interaction with Rochester police. I think it was later the same day or the next day after he grabbed a knife from Open Door Mission, began cutting himself, and would not drop the knife as he moved in the direction of an RPD officer. The officer fired 5 shots, and Tyshawn died. So we're talking about that response, but also how training works for police, how hiring works, and how de-escalation works. You just heard the chief talking about some of the promised changes, whether it's in the city of Rochester or Monroe County, with offering more mental health support experts, and the chief's skepticism that they have invested enough to make that more commonplace. So after this, only break, I want to take some of your phone calls. And one of the calls I think will help us see if Tyshawn Jones got the help he needed. And, certainly Officer Furia showed compassion and care in the interaction. The question is, where does someone go in that spot? And can the shelters offer the help that's needed? And if not, what do we do about that? So much more with the chief and with Officer Furia after this break. Coming up in our second hour, the new CEO of the Center for Dispute Settlement in Rochester joins us. Shira May talks about how she sees the problem of bringing people together while still making sure there is accountability for wrongs done. How the center operates, whether it's helping neighbors, students, teachers, people in companies, and more. The Center for Dispute Settlement joins us next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. First, an email from Joanne. Joanne in Rochester says, does anyone know how Tyshawn Jones was cared for at the first homeless shelter? And if homeless shelters are just that, shelters for people with nowhere to go, why would they deny entrance to a man without shoes? Also, the interaction between the Gates police and Mr. Jones was calm and engaging. However, he was not armed at the time. Could the situation have been handled differently in the city? No doubt that there are many situations where alternative solutions result in better outcomes. I think, Joanne, I think we talked about that a moment ago, and the chief especially saying, that he thinks it was a reasonable response from RPD given everything that was happening there. Let me also take Jane's call on the first part of this. What happens at a shelter? How do we know if someone's getting cared for? Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, this goes to the chief. I want to please, if you would, just think about your authority and the power of an officer and a person who's already partly discredited because of having interaction, the way it's gone down so far. When you do ask something, it can often be, I know you know this, be heard as a command. And so that can set up some distrust. He's not asking me, what are my choices? And if I do disobey, what comes next? What do you do? And I just think that power just exerts itself over everything that's been said and can frighten people. And so I want to know what you legally have to leave with. What's the resolution you're legally required to have? Thank you.
All right, Jane, thank you. So let's take Jane's question first for the chief. Go ahead, chief.
No, thank you. First of all, thank you for calling in. I'm glad people are listening to this. It's great conversations we're having. Look, at the end of the day, you have a company in town that called for a trespasser, okay? And at the end of the day, that citizen who called on the video, he wants the police to take care of this problem, okay? And he has a right to have police services come over here and address this issue. So at the end of the day, if everything didn't go perfect and we did, there was just no way to get Tyshawn to leave or to call somebody, then ultimately that citizen does have a right to make a turnover arrest for a trespass, to physically get him off the property and to have their day in court that this guy wouldn't leave my property. But again, we don't want to go down that route, and we don't want to have to do that. We go to calls all the time where somebody's committed a crime, but a lot of times the victim just wants the issue to go away, and they're not looking for an arrest. And that's exactly what happened over there. We were able to get them to just go. We took them a place. But I think the bigger conversation, and I'm so proud of you, Evan, for bringing this up, we're all focused on the police, what happens on the street. The biggest issue is what happens after the police successfully bring somebody to wherever that location is. And let me tell you something. I came out in October, and I announced I am boycotting Strong Memorial Hospital, bringing mental hygiene arrest over there, because I was fed up with there being a lack of follow-up plan and a lack of care when the person walked out of there anywhere from 3 hours to 10 hours later. And that is still the $22 question that we don't have an answer for. What happens when we bring somebody to that emergency intake? We don't know. I got HIPAA thrown at me all the time. We can't get any answers. And if ground zero for mental health is at a homeless shelter, I mean, wouldn't it make sense that we put resources in the homeless shelter? If that's where ground zero is, that's where we need to be putting resources so that when the police do drop him off and, you know, he was in there for 10 hours, you know, what was going on, right? I mean, you got to understand where to put your resources. And all the focus is on the police response, which we're going to improve. We've committed to training every police officer in Monroe County through this crisis intervention training. But what's happening on the backside is still the unknown questions. And you can't get answers because of HIPAA or they won't tell you. And look, I was shocked when I saw that video. And everything was going smooth, right? And as a viewer, you're like, okay, we're 30 minutes into this video. The officer's doing a great job. We got Tyshawn there. We've been talking to him. Everything's going great. They do their little check on his name. Everything's good. And then all of a sudden, well, we can't take him in because he doesn't have shoes. And you're sitting there as a viewer like, I can't believe they just said that. I mean, this is a homeless shelter, right? And you're going to tell us the guy can't come in because he doesn't have shoes? It boggles you, you know? And so, look, there's a lot of systemic changes that need to be made. Besides, law enforcement is just one piece of this bigger puzzle of this whole mental health.
So you agree, Chief, with Joanne, who emailed and said, how come you end up at a homeless shelter and they're told you can't come in because you don't have shoes? I mean, the reason you're there is because you're homeless. You don't have clothes. I mean, you don't have stuff.
Right. I would expect homeless people to come like that.
And I will say again, Officer Furia was pretty creative in trying to not only find a solution, find some boots, but then make sure Tyshawn felt comfortable with them. And I'm also not trying to cast aspersions at shelters who, you know, we've talked to people from many different shelters, and we will do that again. And their work is really hard and important. And so, and often it's very loving and patient and kind, and we should be grateful for that. But I take the point that everyone needs more resources, and maybe some of that needs to be there. So I appreciate that, Chief. Let me also get Hoover in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, Hoover.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Evan. You know, every taxpayer in the town of Gates should be thankful they have this man as their chief, because he definitely knows what he's doing. He's got the experience, and he's able to articulate it. So the reason I'm calling is I'm retired. I used to work in various government offices. I was an auditor for the city of Rochester back in the 70s, and we had these LEAA grants that were written by the city staff, funded through the federal government in conjunction with state. So we got a grant for a couple of years. It was about $400,000 a year. Terry Ricard was the chief at the time. Roy Irving was the director of research and evaluation. I worked with them on this grant, and I audited it. What we found was we had hired a psychologist from the University of Rochester, and we hired some master's level social workers, and we created three teams that were going to work with RPD. The trainer went out and he trained three groups of police officers, the officers in the field, the sergeants who supervised them in the sections, and then the command personnel downtown. Everybody had the training. It was set up right. It performed really well. The people who were the social workers only went out when certain criteria was met. None of these emergency situations, you know, the drug situation 40 years ago was nowhere close to what it is today. There were people who were, you know, spaced out, but not the way they are today, and not with the vigilance and when they confront an officer. So, you know, we established a program It worked successfully. It was funded, I believe, for 3 years. I went to work for Monroe County for a while before I left and moved to Florida to work with other police organizations. And I came back to Rochester after being away for a couple decades. And that program, the leadership in City Hall did not fund it. And it would have been the best thing because it would have been going on for 40 years. And you do demonstration projects to see if they're going to work. Well, darn it, it worked. And the city council just couldn't find the money. And I don't know why. I wasn't here when it came up. But I audited that program after the first 2 years, and it was working. So that's what I wanted to say. It's back to the future. I hope Adam Bello and the other leadership in the county and the city will understand. Go into the files. You could probably read my report that's in there, the audit, and you'll learn something. I don't know. Anyway, Chief, it's wonderful to hear you. And Officer Furrier, great job. Thanks, Evan, for this wonderful program.
All right, Hoover, thank you. Chief, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for calling in. I mean, it was like memory lane listening to you drop those names like Terry Ricard. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you are definitely somebody who's been around a long time. But like, let me explain stuff about how government really operates, okay? This is government 101 here. We love grants. Grants are pretty much dried up over the years. All those big grants that law enforcement used to get are pretty much dried up. You know, everybody, the federal government, state government, everyone's struggling for money. Number one. Number two, typically what happens by your policymakers is when the grant does dry up, it's like, well, everybody gets laid off and whoever was part of that, it ends. You know, grants have when the grant ends, most of your policymakers will not continue to fund it. It's all about dollars and cents. And that's where we as a community have got to make a decision, okay? Now, the airport is in the town of Gates. And we just went through a $60 million renovation at the airport. And every time I drive by it, it is the coolest light show you'd ever want to see. I know, it's beautiful, okay? But as residents or citizens of New York, we have got to decide what's more important, the light show at the airport for $60 million, or what could we have put towards human resources? You know what I mean? And you've got to get government to decide, what do the people want? Do we want these drug rehab places for the opioid problem? Do we want mental health places so we can bring somebody to a mental health place? Or are we going to continue to do I thought the airport was beautiful before we did the $60 million renovation. But you're right. Grant money, when the minute it dries up, a lot of these programs just go away because it's all about funding and what's important, you know?
Well, that's an interesting point on the airport, and that was a decision made under the DeNolfo administration. I don't know how the Bello administration feels, but that was probably done before they were working on that. Let me squeeze in a couple more quick points before we lose the hour. Mark is one of several listeners, having watched some of the interaction of Tyshawn Jones with RPD and had heard calls for either beanbag or taser, and ultimately those non-lethal forms of weaponry were not available. And Mark is wondering, do you carry that, and would that have been an option? Officer Furia, do you carry a taser or other non-lethal forms that, you know, on a regular basis?
Yeah, I personally don't carry a taser, but there are officers in the agency that do have them, and they're a part of every shift. So, and we also carry pepper ball guns in our vehicles, which we're able to use as a less lethal option.
Okay, so Chief, again, I'm not at all trying to get you to pile on RPD. I'm just wondering, should the officer in that point have had another means besides just his firearm?
Well, I'm just going to tell you what we do. And again, you got to understand, I'm a 30-man department.
No, I take the point. It's a very different situation.
I have 14 police cars, okay? Yeah. I don't have 700 employees and 200 police cars. So for Gates to go out and get extra equipment, I only got to outfit 14 cars with pepper ball guns, with tasers, you know. And so it's a lot easier for a smaller agency to have all that. And look, when my guys and gals go on a call, I want them to have all the necessary tools, right? Whether it's the shooter in Colorado, right? I got to make sure that equipment's there on scene. We can't go back to the office and go get it. Or it's a less than lethal situation. I got to have that they kind of have those tools in their toolbox, and it's got to be there out on the scene, you know?
I take that point, but if they had that tool, would that have been a preferred option to try first?
Well, it's another strategy that could have been mixed into the solution. You know?
Okay.
But whether it worked, I don't know. But it definitely could be another strategy.
Okay. And last point, about 40 seconds, Chief. As you've said, you don't think that there have been the resource allocation to really get the mental health response that so many people have been calling for. How much more is it going to take? What kind of allocation?
Well, and that's the mystery of all this, right? We're all guessing because we don't know. But if we're going to have a serious conversation about this stuff, we've got to have staffing. And I'm just guessing, okay? You'd have to run it like a police department, like the FIT, okay? You're talking probably 5 or 6 FIT cars assigned at various districts within the county so that they're spaced out. And I'm thinking at least 5 or 6 cars you got to have ready to go if you think they're going to get there in 10 minutes to a crisis call.
Okay. I hope you'll come back, Chief, as we talk to county and local leaders about these kind of changes, because I certainly want to be realistic about what can be done here. So I hope you'll come back, Chief.
Thank you, Evan, for having us. We're very happy.
Chief of the Gates Police Department is Jim Van Brederode, and Officer Mike Furia. Again, Officer, I know it's just one interaction, but I think the community feels gratitude for the interaction there, and I just want to express that and express my gratitude for your time today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Mike Furia, Gates Police Officer, as well. One of many connections conversations we'll have on this, and you can hear from the chief. There's going to be a lot more to talk about going forward. More connections coming up in a moment.